Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, check this out. This is Fresh Get Out of the China Man with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the Blunt Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Murder.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Bomb.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Randy Rand.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records revealing that each of the rappers are coming up, getting put on. We needed the platform to fight the mainstream. The show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow with Wizards.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow design. Check out the archives and lunch with the shows. Plenty of content for you to do. Everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real.
We got
the gold,
we beat, we fought our bitch, we represent. All them chillers on the mic, and we show love to all you fans.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's UGS for life, dog. Hip-hop AD, representing for them legends. Rapping mumble rappers, so we ain't sitting on the hips. Two-pocket beats, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. It's the Murder Master Music Show. Free the homie gangsta, bro. I see these rappers on the streets. I got my chopper about to blow. Stay up on that raw shit, uncut street shit.
Keep it
live
forever, bitch, we coming hella strong. I see you feeding for the show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is episode 452 of the Murder Master Music Show. We have a special guest. I'm going to tell you about him in a minute. We usually do church reality on Sundays. We're going to be back with that next Sunday. We're going to have a nice discussion. That'll be on the 22nd. Make sure you tune into that. But my guest tonight's no stranger to the show. He came in around episode 305, I want to say, maybe a little bit before that. But he's an author. He wrote 2 books, Shady Business, Umbilical, also the former bodyguard of Eminem. I'm talking about Big Nas. Let's bring him on straight out of Detroit. What's up, Big Nas?
What up, dude? What's going on, man?
Man, it's a huge honor to have you back, brother. How you been?
Man, I'm good, man. I'm glad to be back, man. You guys always do me great justice and helping me be able to move some units and have some hip-hop conversation, man. Let's do this.
Definitely. Now, for our listeners that don't know much about you, break down exactly, you know what I'm saying, your background and how you got to the point where you met Eminem and all that.
Well, basically, I've been in the bodyguard business since 1992. After several failed attempts at getting in with the Secret Service, passed everything but couldn't get on. You know, it's a legacy type of hookup when you're trying to get inside the government. So I ended up doing the same type of work for celebrities, and Eminem heard about me. Years later, in 1999, asked me to come on the road. When I first was asked by them, I turned them down. After much convincing by way of Paul Rosenberg, they liked the way I worked with him at a rave party. And the next thing I know, 3 days later, man, I was on a tour, 1999 tour for the Slim Shady LP, and also doing a recording of the Marshall Mathers LP.
And now you first, hold on 1 sec, Naz. You first turned Eminem down. Why did you turn him down?
Well, at the time I was working for General Motors. I was already making $100,000 a year, and wasn't really no need to take on that gig. But also as a hobby, a lot of people don't know this, I've always been a music producer, and at that time I had a record label. And I figured if I get on with him as a bodyguard and doing the music thing, there will be a quicker avenue for me to get in through the back door and be able to meet with Jimmy Iovine and Funkmaster Flex and all the people that I did meet. And I found out the closer you get to the industry doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get a deal. You know, my artist, the Wash Squad, and a bunch of other groups that I was working with were good enough, but it wasn't our time, I guess, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. And you eventually you became his bodyguard, and how did life change for you from going from working at General Motors to being the bodyguard of Eminem?
I tell you what, man, as working for General Motors, man, you know, made money, you know, lived a good life. But when you go on the road, you become somebody's bodyguard on the status of like Eminem, man. That was like the Elvis Presley of that time. You know, you are granted a lot of perks, and really you're not held accountable for nothing, man. You can kind of do what you want to do, man. You know, long as it's within reason. You know, you get in every place free. You know, long as you with the artist, you get in places free, you eat free. And then sometimes you get clothing endorsements, you know, for the most part, to the point where they knew your size of clothes before you even came to their thing, because they wanted you to wear this clothes or this outfit or this pair of shoes for this award ceremony or whatever. A lot of perks.
Did you know at the time that Eminem was going to be as big as he became?
Yeah, I did, man. I knew this guy was going to be huge. For one, man, you know, America's in love with the Golden Boy effect. You know, they've been looking for another Elvis Presley for a long time, but they ended up getting more than that. You know, he just wasn't a white artist. You know, he was a white artist doing black music, you know, doing hip-hop. And when I heard him in the studio, I was like, wow, man, this cat is phenomenal. But before I had even worked with him, I had already bought a CD while I was working at General Motors. I was driving to work listening to his music every day before I even was introduced to him to even being his bodyguard. And I was like, wow, this guy's dope.
Yeah. So you become his bodyguard, basically, and you guys you start going out on the road. This is for the first album. How real did it get for you? I mean, you had to have had your hands full because people was just in love with this guy.
Oh yeah, man, he had that. He had the Midas touch, man. You know, a lot of people were crazy about him. You know, Craze fans. It got to a point, man, where we really couldn't even go anywhere. Like, just walking through the airport was a challenge. For the most part, me taking on that job, I thought it was going to be just dealing with, you know, of course, the crazed groupies and, you know, the females and really no beefs because, you know, he was a white boy, you know, doing the black music thing. And of course, we talked about this on a couple of the other shows. The only real problem that came about later was the whole Death Row, Suge Knight, you know, beef, you know, during the fallout of Dre leaving Death Row and all of that. So that's when it got real. That's when it got real. That's when I really earned my money.
Yeah, and it started. Then it started the Source Awards. Wasn't there like some incident where you had to get him out of harm's way in a hurry?
Yeah, got him out of harm's way in a hurry with the whole Death Row clique over there. Long story short, what ended up happening was they were trying to strong arm Eminem to be over at Death Row because they were struggling at that time, and Dre had already signed him, and that was pretty much Dre's first artist. That was Dre's comeback as well as Eminem's coming out. So it was a beautiful marriage in hip-hop that they both blew up, and Dre was able to regain everything that he lost with Death Row. And, you know, and Death Row and Suge Knight, they didn't like that. You know, they figured like, well, you know what, you can come make money with us. We're bigger than Dre. You can come roll with us. And when he said no, that's when the problems began. You know, we talked about that, you know, last year on the show, man, and that thing, that really blew up, man. That caused a lot of controversy, man. You know, I talk about those stories in that book, Shady Business, and I earned my money, man. It was interesting. It was very interesting.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like they, you know what I'm saying, they wanted to snatch him from Dre, and when they realized that they couldn't do that, then it was game on. Just kind of similar to what they were doing with Dre, with Easy and Ruthless. You know,
yeah, pretty much.
Snatching
pretty much
Dre away from Ruthless. So you kind of went through the same thing that Jerry Heller and everybody at Ruthless went through. You guys had to have been on edge. I mean, when you guys were going from show to show, were you always extra cautious and kind of worried that some shit might pop off?
Well, yeah, anytime you're a bodyguard, man, you always have to take precautions. If you have to case out every facility that you go to, know all of the escape routes, know where the nearest hospital is, know where the nearest police station is. And then, you know, when I worked out there, when things started getting thick, I hired a few LAPD officers to come along and work with me to protect, you know, Eminem. But they pretty much did it behind the scenes. they let me do the upfront stuff, so if any criminal activity will break out, they will step forward and I step back. The great thing about the off-duty LAPD and retired LAPD guys, I was licensed CPL carrier. They will also supply me with the legal weapons for me to be able to hold it down out there while we were in the studio, not on the streets, but in the studio. That's when you really needed the artillery.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're pretty much, I mean, it's like protecting the president in a way, because this guy is a cash cow for Interscope Records, for Dr. Dre, for Jimmy Iovine, you know, and you got to make sure he's safe. We had the lynch mob on the show, and they were talking about a similar instance. They had to protect Ice Cube during the beef with NWA. They had to protect him like the president and make sure he was safe. This had been an incredible amount of pressure. How do you get through, and cope with stuff like that magnitude? Because, like I said, this guy's on the level of president.
Exactly. And I'm going to tell you, man, for me, for one, from being from Detroit, historically speaking, we're used to the hustle, we're used to the grind, and we're used to violence. Not everybody in the city is violent, and it's not historically a violent city, but violent things have happened here in the past. And when you've been around that, you lived around that, when you go to L.A. and other cities, I hate to say it, man, Detroit, historically speaking, is one of the hardest cities in the United States. So a lot of stuff, we're already prepared. We're always watching our back. We're always looking over our shoulder because that's just what we're used to. So for me to be a bodyguard, to be a licensed bodyguard, to be on the road, and then, having a proper training, which is key. A lot of people don't know this, man. I trained out there. I went to police academy out there, man, for the first 8 weeks to get certified to make sure that I was doing everything legally so I would never be caught up like a puppy's bodyguard back in the day, having a gun and not licensed for it, But I'm going to take it a step further. You talk about the presidential thing and them being like the president. What you got to understand, it goes deeper than that when Eminem blew up. That was after the time that Puffy was killed, Pac was killed, hip-hop industry was wide open. Everybody was trying to eat. And then you get this white guy that comes through that's dope, and then you got Dre behind him. You can't lose. So people wanted a piece of that. Rather, it was by, pulling you over here, to try to strong-arm you over here to get with this label, or they was trying to get on the song. And it got to a point people was pushing their albums back, just like people were pushing their albums back when Pac came out. But the thing was, Pac was dropping an album every 6 months. You remember that?
Yeah. He was coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And, you talk about the whole presidential thing, man. That's a good segue, man. So I'm watching the BET Cypher the other night.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I want to get your take on that.
Oh my God, man. I'm going to tell you. Dope. Just like I said on Twitter, it was dope. But, the big but, my question is, man, did you and your people talk this over beforehand? Now, we know he did the campaign speech where he went at Trump. And there's one thing when you go at an MC, or you're dealing with beef with somebody in the street, but you're talking about going against the establishment, the government, the president of the United States. And I'm not going to lie to you, man, everything that he said about Trump was true. He killed it. He nailed it.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the thing for me, the honeymoon period lasted about 2 days, and then I went on Twitter, and I'm looking at some of the comments that he said. Basically, when he told the Trump fans that also like him, y'all got to decide. If you for him, you not for me. Make a decision. If not, fuck you. I was like, wow, man. And then he threw up the black power fist. I was like, whoa. Powerful, but also at the same time, I was like, man, this bodyguard got his work cut out for him, man. See, now, what he did was powerful, and somebody needed to say it. But here's my question to you, man. Why is it that when you have black leaders, politicians, and athletes that say the same thing that Eminem just said, they don't get the notoriety. But Eminem says it, or anybody else, white, says it, it's taken seriously. Because basically what's been happening is it takes it a little bit further. Eminem is now the black leader of black people. But everything he said was absolutely right.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? Everything he said was absolutely right. I agree with everything that he said. But I'm like, okay, other people have said, who's that? YG and another rapper said it 2 years ago with the song FTD.
We had the homie Renaissance. He made a song called Trump Dies, and they actually sent the Secret Service to his house.
See, now we're getting somewhere. Now, I sat back. I looked at this. I said, wow, man. I said, basically what he did, legally standing, from what I've been reading, had Eminem been black and took that platform and said that Secret Service would have been at his house, probably been arrested for making terrorist, terrorist threat toward the state or toward the government or toward the president. It would have been some questioning. And also in the past, we know when black men speak up, when they got that platform, Malcolm X, Martin, Medgar Evans, they get sniped.
Yeah.
So my question to you, what do you think the repercussions are going to be from him saying this? And I think it goes beyond a tweet. I've been listening to see what Trump has to say about it, but I haven't heard anything. I know a lot of his. Have you heard anything?
No, but my opinion is, you know, Eminem, he's all about controversy, as you know. Does he feel the way he feels about Trump like that? Maybe so, but in the past, you know, one of my co-hosts, Pittsburgh Pat, he pointed out to me that Eminem actually did a skit with Trump at the MTV Awards, where Trump was endorsing Eminem as a president. And also in the past, Ray Benzino and Dave Mace dropped the bombshell in The Source where Eminem called a female the N-word. So
hey, let's talk about it, man.
How the hell is the voice of black people? I don't understand.
Okay, check this out.
That's just my take on it.
Check this out. Source Magazine, February 2004. I got the magazine in my hand. I'm actually featured in this magazine, along with me, Chantown, Chaos Kid. And it talks about the whole Benzino beef, the racist rap. It was called the racist rap. And a lot of people don't know. See, this is talking about 14, 15 years ago that this article came out. But the situation actually happened 10 years prior to that, where Eminem and a couple of the white MCs did a song, and they said, you know, they were young, they said, you know, they did it for fun, but they dropped the N-bomb, they said nigger, porch monkey, moon crickets, that's a new one, I never heard that one. But then you had a lot of people that came out, man. You had a lot of people that came out against them that talked about this, everybody from Killer Mike, Styles P. Man, I know the shutdown right now. If they re-release this, man, it's almost the same thing. It's like history repeats itself. It repeats itself.
Yeah.
Eminem is technically Donald Trump. It's almost like this whole controversy thing that they did. It was genius, man. I'm not going to lie to you. It was genius because anytime he does anything controversy, it's an album dropping within 30 days of him doing that. That's just the way that they do it. You know, I've been in that camp long enough to see this. So M goes against Trump. It was almost like they set it up like he's campaigning. Eminem did to Trump what Trump did to Hillary, Bernie Sanders, Rubio. He did the same exact thing. He became the bully in the room. But here's the thing, though. Trump is not an MC. That's the government, man. That's the president of the United States. And I just wonder, what's going to be the repercussions of that? Hopefully none. But you're going against the government. Only thing I can say, you better make sure your tax is right.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame when you're on Trump's radar. I mean, this guy goes after the football organizations. I mean, everybody. You know, he don't give a fuck. You know.
Exactly.
And he's got power brokers behind him as well. But, yeah, to me, like you said, Eminem's got an album dropping. Why not go at the guy that goes at everybody? You know, why not make – because chances are Trump's going to tweet out, you know, a fuck Eminem post here shortly, and it's probably going to boost record sales. through the roof.
Yeah, but you know what, though, man? I feel like if Trump was going to say something, it would have been done by now. You know, that's, something should have been said or done by now. But I was talking to a few friends of mine. They said, man, when you're dealing with the government, man, they don't really come out like that. They're real cohort, you know, when they do stuff, man. They do it in private. But the only thing I can tell you, you know, in a situation like that, when you go up against 45 or any president or politician and you put them on blast like that, you got to make sure your taxes is right. You want to have somebody taste your food for you. You know, you're walking on eggshells at that point, man. That is a whole nother level of plan. Now, here's the other part. What if it was pre-orchestrated?
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah. That's always a huge possibility.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Always a huge possibility.
What I'm wondering about now, like I said, I went on Twitter, I went on a lot of social networks, and I've been reading a lot of these people post. And I'm talking about white America. Some of the things that was being said, Eminem, you're a piece of shit. I can't believe you when it gets to president. You know, I loved you as an artist. Now I say fuck you back. You know, I can't believe you did that shit. I hope your album flops. I'll never buy another one of your records again. Fucking die. All this other shit. I'm like, wow, man. I said, that's, woo. I'm just almost wondering, did the public take it too personal? Because it's almost like now that Eminem said this, the white fans that bought his records, not all of them, he's still going to sell a lot of units, but the white fans that said this, do they look at him as like, you know, a nigger now? Because he put the fist up, he said what he said, and for me, when I looked at it, when I seen him do the BET thing, I was like, wow, man. I said, that's dope. I said, because at this point right now, it's no longer about black and white. You know, it's about rich and poor right now, and it's about the establishment, fighting the establishment. But some of these people are taking it too far, and I can tell some of the people that were saying some of this stuff were the same people that was carrying the torches over there, the tiki torches in Charlottesville.
Those tiki torches,
yeah. Exactly.
A bunch of idiots. They go to the dollar store and buy some tiki torches.
It's going to be interesting to see, man.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I think it's going to move me, so.
It's definitely up in the air. When you have two people like Eminem and Donald Trump in the mix, it's pretty much the WWE, you know.
Yes.
It's all going to be scandals and crazy stuff and, you know, things of that nature. Okay, so here we are. You know, you've been Eminem's bodyguard for a minute now. Yeah, success is coming. He's doing real good. At what point, you know what I'm saying, did you say, you know what, it's time for me to depart, and why did you depart from being Eminem's bodyguard?
For me, man, it was several things, man. You know, you think you want to be in the industry, you're in the industry. I was trying to get my music and stuff on. For one thing, I ended up leaving because, you know, we couldn't come to an agreement about the amount of money that I was being paid. I should have been paid more money. I wanted to have additional help to help me so I could have some off days. Like I said, it was a great experience, man, but at some point, you got to get your just due. And then I started seeing a lot of stuff, man, that I didn't agree with. You know, of course, the drugs. You know, it was cool when it was just like the weed, and like maybe the whippers or stuff like that. You know, it's still drugs, but when the stuff started getting harder, you know, like the acid and, you know, the shrooms and stuff like that. You know, even the shrooms is not so bad. I'm not condoning drug use, but I seen it escalating to another level. And I knew right then I couldn't be around that type of stuff, man. Because when you stay around the industry that long and it's getting worse, you know, you're gonna get some shit on you, man. Voluntarily or involuntarily. And I didn't want no parts of that. So I went back to work at GM.
Yeah. Yeah. It was time to go. Oh, yeah. Hey, another guy from Detroit. I want to go back to Trump for a minute. I don't mean to jump all over the place here on this one. But,
No.
Kid Rock. Okay, Kid Rock is... You can tell he's a huge supporter of Trump and whatnot, flying the rebel flag at his shows. Was recently in the news for comments he made. He's running for Senate. Did you get to interact with Kid Rock and Eminem back in the day? Did they have any kind of relationship? And what do you think of the whole Kid Rock situation that's going on right now? With his political views and everything.
Here's the thing. If Kid Rock is for Trump and Eminem is against Trump, it can't possibly be a relationship. Unless it's one of those situations where they mutually respect each other. Now, in the past, I'm not saying them, every once in a while they move across each other's paths and stuff like that, and they were cool. But a lot of people don't know. See, I got a little bit of history for you, man. My uncle Al Williams is the one that got Kid Rock the deal with Jive back in the day. My uncle was managing Kid Rock when he got signed and ended up with Too Short and all of that. But Kid Rock technically was the first white rapper out of the city of Detroit. And he switched over later. A lot of people don't know that. Yes. Yes. Very much.
That was back in 1990, Jive Records, I remember.
Yep. He was white rapper out of Detroit, and he switched over. Now, as far as flying the Confederate flag and all that stuff, man, a lot of people don't know this. My family is, I have a unique family, man. It's a combination of entrepreneurs, ball players, law enforcement. We even got a few thugs in there, man. So we rub elbows with a lot of people. Kid Rock's son went to school with my oldest son. Are you ready for this? Kid Rock's son is half black.
Yeah, I did know that, yeah. That's why I was always wondering about his
coming of his views. How do you fly a Confederate flag when you got black children, man?
Yeah. That's what I was trying to figure out. How do you fly a rebel flag when you're all the way from the northern part of the country?
Let me tell you something.
Mason-Dixon lines way the fuck down there from where y'all are.
That mentality is nationwide. It ain't just in the South, man.
Yeah, it is. You're 100% right.
It's nothing to see. Matter of fact, check this out. Kid Rock just did a concert down at Little Caesars Arena. That's the new arena where the Pistons and the Red Wings play at. Prior to Kid Rock's show, you had all these guys down there on motorcycles flying the flag in front of the arena. A shitload of them. Flying the flag. Protesting peacefully, I guess. It's kind of hard to protest peacefully when you're waving a flag of hatred. It's kind of an oxymoron, so it don't really work, but they were able to get away with it. And it was a little bit of a disturbance. Some brothers showed up. They kind of shut it down real quick. But it should have never happened in the first place. See, the thing is what's happened, in my personal opinion, man, M made a major statement. It shouldn't be about black and white anymore. At some point in time, man, we all got to come together. So I know what he was trying to do, and I applaud him for that. And I really don't have any discrepancies with it. I just wonder, I just often wonder, what if a black artist did the same thing with that platform, what would have happened? What would be the outcome? We already know what the outcome would be. Some jail time, some interrogation, possibly even more. To say the same rhetoric that was said on that platform. See, it's different when you do it on an underground level, but when you do a mainstream platform and you hurl the words that were said, like Eminem said, I hate to say it, he can get away with that. He can do that. He get a pass.
Oh.
I find that fascinating.
He said what he said, and they didn't say much after that. Like you said, there's a little bit of uproar at first, but then no one said anything. They swept it under the rug. Kind of like with Bambaataa, he's been accused of molestation and everything, and went to a few newspapers and then swept it under the rug. No one gives a fuck. It's like we need to at least look into this stuff. What I'm saying? We need to at least see, where these problems started and how you can fix them. But a lot of people, they want to sweep things under the rug. But with that being said, I want to go to a break. I want to go to break real quick, and then we're going to come back. We're going to chop it up about Shady Business and a bunch more. Tomorrow we're actually having another Detroit cat on the show, the homie Dice. We're going to play one of the songs from that show. He's got a new one out. It's called Sunshine. Also, rest in peace to Razak Rahim. It's one of Dice's closest homies. He just passed away the other day. Y'all lost a legend over there in the underground. So, but hold the line. We'll be right back, Naz.
All right.
Detroit pioneer right there, one of them is Dice, man. Yeah, you guys got the good music over there in Detroit, man. But we're back here with Big Naz, former bodyguard of Eminem and author of, well, I know the two books, Shady Business and Umbilical. Did you write any other books? Or
actually, I have five books, man. Umbilical is the latest. Five books, man. I've been grinding, man. Shady Business is the first one. Womanizer, The Uncomfortable Truth About Men and Marriage is the second. Mastering Life After Athletics, Husband Unleashed, and Umbilical. And I've catapulted from that, man, to producing TV shows. I got some stuff in the works right now. And it's looking pretty good, man. I'm being Mr. Multimedia, man. I'm doing my thing. I'm finally utilizing my degree.
And that's what's up, man. Hell yeah. Well, you and Eminem, you part ways, you know, and eventually you wrote Shady Business.
That's correct.
What was the initial reaction when that book came out? Because I know it was very controversial. Did you get reaction out of Eminem from that book?
Yeah, they offered to buy it from me for $25,000. But here's the thing: I had a publicist that I was dealing with. Somehow, Eminem's camp got the first three or four chapters of the book. And the only person that could have got it to him that had it was the publisher that I had at the time. They sent it over. Well, I don't know why he sent it to him, but he did. So I ended up getting a call from a good friend of mine in New York that's an attorney. Shout out to Deborah Oxtail. She told me, she said, "Hey, Nas, Eminem Cap, they got your book." And she read to me verbatim what was in the book. She said, "I'm letting you know right now, they're sending a team of investigative reporters to your city to dig up dirt on you to counteract whatever you wrote in the book." I said, "Well, send them." I said, "You know, I don't have no priors. I ain't no felon." I said, "Nothing." I said, "I'm clean as a whistle." So, you know, they sent a team over here allegedly, and they wasn't able to rebut nothing. And then shortly after that, I was offered $25,000 to sell them the book in its entirety. And I told them, "Absolutely not." I said, "You add a zero, and then we can talk." And after that, negotiations ceased. There was no more talk after that. So, and then the book came out, and it shot to number one on Amazon the first day. So that $25,000 that they were talking about, I made that the first day in book sales, man. And it's been on the bestseller list since. But, you know, I've had some ups and downs with it. Last year when I did that interview with you,
yeah,
it blew up, man. And I appreciate that. It blew up. It touched on a whole other hip-hop crowd that wasn't alive back then in 99 or 2000 when the book came out. So a lot of people thought the book just came out. So, you know, it went viral last year. And in the process of it going viral, check this out, man, the book actually got bootlegged, but it was the first version of the book. Can you believe that?
Oh, man.
Yeah. They actually
That's
bootlegged
crazy.
The first version of the book. But here's the thing, though. The new edition were double the size of that. So they only had, they had that. They had the old version. So it was still people went out and bought the new version and the audio book sold and the Kindle book sold. You know, I should be selling more books than I thought. But, you know how it goes, man. It's a timepiece.
Oh, now
it's one
man.
Of those things
yeah.
that, it's a timepiece. It still sells. You know, I'm still waiting on that big payday. But, you know, it does all right, man. It does all right. And I still own all the rights to it. I've had several movie offers. I've turned down a few, and I've gotten dropped from a few. And part of that is because people are scared to do something in regards to Eminem because of who he is. But the thing is, you know, that I own that part, man. I own that part of the book. And, I've reached out to those guys, man, and tried to reconcile with them for the last 15 years. I tried to reach out. I've done my part. You know, I did my part before the movie deals even came into place, and to no avail, man. You know, no response. I got a response from one of his attorneys that said they weren't interested. And the one deal that I had potentially was an $800 million deal, man. Potentially an $800 million deal, and it was a billionaire producer, movie producer that's done some big stuff in Hollywood. And what he wanted me to do was get Eminem on board. Calling Eminem on board, and they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. But the mistake that I made was allowing him to convince me to try to bring those guys on board, and I know they weren't going to be interested. You understand what I'm saying? I should have just turned the deal down, kept some integrity, and turned the deal down. So now when people come to me, I let them know, hey, look, I'm not interested in trying to merge with these cats because they're not interested in merging with me. But if they came to me and said, hey, look, man, let's go ahead and do this, then we can get this money. But the movie's still going to be done regardless. I'm still in negotiation with some people. I finally, I think I found some people that might have, you know, they might have some balls, man. I think they got some balls, man. And I told them, I said, you scared, man, then don't waste my time. You're scared money,
yeah,
don't make money. You know, other than that,
yeah,
I'll
gotta,
sit on
you
that.
You
got to
go
book,
all
man.
In, man. This you is a, not
in,
to cut
man.
You off, Ans, but this is a highly important story because, like I said, this is a story about the guy who was tasked with protecting the hottest artist on the planet at the time.
Exactly.
So, yeah, man, I really think your story is going to be told, man. Just keep pushing, you know what I'm saying? It's interesting how you say a billionaire producer. I kind of have an idea you're talking about Dr. Dre.
I'm talking about film producer.
Oh, a film producer.
You know,
okay.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. Listen, man, I'm going to put it to you like this, man. I've talked to damn near everybody in the industry about this book. I'm the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Everybody loves the book. They want to do something with it, but they're scared shitless. But here's the thing, though. The law of statutation has already passed. There's nothing that he can do to detest the book. You know, if you didn't detest the book, you can't detest the movie. I'm not going to add anything that I don't know. You know, I can't talk about anything that happened after I left. I can only talk about what happened when I was there. That's in the book. So
yeah. That's
what I try to sell people on. This producer wanted to try to do a biopic about his whole life. That's why he wanted me and M to merge together to do a movie about his whole life. I'm like, that would have been cool if we could have did it. That movie would have been bigger than Straight Outta Compton, no doubt about it. But with them not wanting to do it, you know, say, hey, man, it happens, you know. It's the business, man. You're going to get deals, and you're going to get dropped from deals, and you're going to get deals that you don't expect to get. So I'm patient, man. I'm patient. There's some people out there, man, that are looking at it right now that really like what I have. And the great thing about it, they like the other projects that I'm working on too, far as TV. So I'm not just focused on that book. I've really kind of put Shady Business on the back burner and putting my other stuff forward. So
yeah.
I'll probably end up getting deals prior.
You got a lot
to that.
Of stuff.
Yeah. I'm grinding, man. I'm grinding. I'm going to tell you something, man. Worst case scenario, if I got to put it out, I'll do the Tyler Perry. I'll do it myself, man. And it'll be done right. You know, so I'm not tripping.
The story needs to be told, man. It's just like, you know, there's so many other unsung stories of hip-hop. But my co-host, Pittsburgh Pat, just called in, and I know he's got a couple of questions for you. I'm going to bring him on the line.
Okay.
Pittsburgh, young with Big Nas.
What's going on, Big Nas? How you doing, man?
What up, though? You all right?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Yeah,
that's good.
Last time you were on the show, you had said something, and I just wanted you to try to clarify what you meant. You had said that Eminem wanted to sign Esham to Shady Records. And after you said it, you said, but everything has to be approved by Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. Now, was that something that Eminem tried to get done, or was it just something that he wished to happen and it just obviously never happened?
I think it was something that, you know, I can't really speak to him on that, but I will say this. I'm going to take it back. I'm going to take it back a step further than that.
Okay.
A heavy portion of Eminem's style is based off of what Esham did before Eminem. We're talking about 15 years, almost 15 years before Eminem. Now, you could want to sign somebody, but the handlers who got the money, if they don't approve of it, it's not going to happen. And I hate to say this, man, and I hope that changes. I really hope that changes. And that's a great point because now with Paul Rosenberg being the CEO of Def Jam, Paul has the power. Paul and M have the power to open up the Midwest wide open. But they got to start with Detroit. There's so many. Man, it's so many talented artists here, man. Everybody from the Cheddar Boys, Street Lords, I mean, man, you know, the Y Squad, Acapella Flows. Man, I could go on and on and on and on. I mean, it's so many people, hip-hop, R&B. But the thing is, he's in a Berry Gordy-type position. And what I can't understand is why they never opened up shop here to solely executive produce Detroit artists. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're at their point now. They've been past that point. They've been past that point.
Yeah.
So hopefully Paul uses his power to do that. Now, will he do it? I don't know, man. Time will tell, man. But I'm going to tell you what. If he don't, a lot of people are going to be pissed off, man. Because you got a lot of people ready to eat here. They hungry, man. They starving, man. And Esham is past due, man. That guy's still doing stuff, man.
Yeah. We've had him on the show. We just had Mastermind on recently. Yeah, Esham's still moving, man. He just put out
he's
a new album.
Moving,
he's still
man.
Touring.
Man, I'm going to go on record and say this, man. The first artist that Paul should be signing is Esham out of here, man. I challenge Paul to do that. He should do that. I mean, because if it wasn't for Esham, there wouldn't be no Eminem, man. Because Esham was the first shock. He was the first shock rapper. Some of the stuff that he was talking about, he was talking about that almost 15 years way before M. And M was a fan of Esham. So really, they should pay homage and get Esham a deal, man. That, in my personal opinion, man, all them artists that's here should be getting a deal with Def Jam. I don't know why it's not a Def Jam Detroit. I don't know why, man. They need to make that happen. These people here ready to eat.
I agree with you,
man,
because everybody you hear from Detroit is every time somebody comes out from Detroit, they stick around for a while. They're talented. Everybody likes them. You got that kid T Grizzly coming out of Detroit now, and everybody seems to like him. But what you said about Esham, everybody pretty much that we've had on the show from Detroit, either they were influenced by Esham through his style of what he was talking about, or just the hustle part of it, just the independent thing. They might sound nothing like Esham, but they were influenced by the way that he moved independently, and he was the first guy to blew up from Detroit, like, on that level. And I agree with you, though, man. Like, there's so many dope people from Detroit that it's an untapped market. Like, somebody could blow that city, you know what I mean? Like, like Detroit should have that year that, like, Houston, Texas had back in 2005. There are so many people in Detroit that are just so dope that I don't know why somebody doesn't come through and just, you know, raise all those guys up, man.
If Detroit is, since Berry Gordy and Motown left, man, it's like having 1,000 platinum artists produce albums stranded on an island. But yet, you get these people on this cruise ship that are all music execs. They come here, they pick and choose what they want, and they go back and tweak this stuff and turn it into their own shit, man. And then we sit back here, we listen to our stuff on the radio, somebody else did. But we don't have the money and we don't have the attorneys to get on. What I'm saying to M and Paul, I'm challenging them, man, to bring it back to the D, man. But here's the thing. I guarantee you, I'm going to say this, man. I'm going to go on record saying this. There's so much talent here, man. There's so much talent here that once they come back here, we're locking it down. I guarantee you, man. It's going to be hard for it to get back out, man. I mean, because Detroit got a lot of talent. I'm not just talking about hip-hop. I'm talking about R&B, jazz, gospel. You got – this city has been blessed. And I'm going to say this, too. One of the reasons why the violence is so high here, you got a lot of creative people that don't have an outlet. So you force them to have to grind, and they struggle. But really what they're trying to express is they're trying to get their creativity out. So they get bored and they start doing dumb shit. But if you get some of these people these deals, man, they can eat, they'll get back to the city. Paul and M got the avenue to do that, man. They got
Indeed,
it.
Man.
They should do it. I'm calling them out, man.
Indeed.
Hell,
I actually have another question.
Man.
I'm sure that you work for Eminem. The whole Esham D12 thing happened at the Warp Tour. Now, there's a rumor out there that after that happened, I don't know how long after or exactly what was going on, but there's a rumor out there that Esham and his people retaliated to that in Los Angeles at a video shoot. I know Obie Trice and Proof were rumored to be there. Do you know anything about that, or is that just a silly rumor that's out there?
You know what? That probably happened after I left. You talking about Obie Trice, that was after I left. See, I was there when 50 was being discussed, being signed. That was in Germany when he had the song How to Rob. And he had the 12-inch song, How to Rob. And M heard that. He said, yo, I'm signing this kid. That's how 50 came on through a conversation between Paul and M, and they both agreed on it, and they signed him. And the rest is history. See, it's cool to put, you know, 50 deserves it, man. He's dope, man. I mean, you know, but you got 150 shits here, man. There's been 50 before 50. You see what I'm saying? You got a lot of MCs here, and I'm not taking nothing from 50, man, but, you know, these guys, you got guys here, man, that write and produce movies. They also, they're hip-hop artists. They write and produce movies. They're doing plays. They're doing the whole nine, man. It's a lot of creative talent here, man. They're just looking for an avenue, man. And I can't stress this enough. Them guys, man, they need to come on home and put these people on, man. The ones that have worked hard. I mean, you know, I know everybody got to work hard for what they've done. You know, there ain't no handouts for man, but at least see what's here. Shake the tree, man. It's a lot of stuff here, man. It's a lot of stuff here.
Definitely.
Look, trust me, not just out of the movie industry. Go ahead.
Now, were you Eminem's bodyguard during the whole conflict with Psychopathic? Like, I know Eminem had got arrested for pulling the gun on dude that worked for Psychopathic. I think that was Billy Bill. He did that too. Were you the bodyguard during that time? And, like, was there any conflict ever that you had to deal with due to that?
You know what? That was right after I left. But we had conflict at shows. You had, I forgot, what do you call the insane clown posse people? The Juggalos or something like that? They would show up at his shows, man, wearing the T-shirts, causing havoc and stuff like that. And there was one incident in Las Vegas where a guy was there heckling. He had the shirt on and shit, man. And told the guy, hey, man, calm down. He stopped the show to deal with this guy, and the guy wouldn't stop. They told his fans to get his ass out of here. The fans whooped his ass and put him out. They put him out. And then this kid still decides he still got something to say to him, so he tries to meet us over at the tour bus. So, you know, I'm telling you, man, it was a lot of stuff, man. We had a situation in L.A. where Tank Abbas was good friends with ICP, and he sent Tank Abbas. They sent Tank Abbas after us. And his little goons, man, you know, the guys from WCW and all that. But, you know, we were so deep. You know, these guys are wrestlers. You know, they wrestlers. We not wrestling with y'all, man. You know, my people out there, man, you know, these dudes had guns. You know, our crew got guns. Ain't nobody wrestling with y'all. You know, they came to the hotel looking for us and everything, man.
ICP sent Tank Abbott after you guys. Where was this at, in Los Angeles?
This was in L.A. after the House of Blues concert. This was the same concert the night that Dustin Hoffman played as the Mummy on stage, where Eminem would do the, you know, the whole little Mummy skit on stage. Dustin Hoffman unveiled himself, and, you know, he was the Mummy on stage that night. Classic night, man.
Did you have to deal with Tank Abbott yourself? I mean, how did that situation work out?
I had to keep him off the stage, man. He was trying to climb on the stage.
Wow.
Had to keep him off the stage. He was trying to climb on the stage during the show.
Wow.
Man, we was not having that, man.
And how did you figure out that it was because of Insane Clown Posse?
Oh, man, messages were sent to us. And a couple of guys had on the ICP T-shirt suit.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Oh, they sent a message,
that's
man.
That's crazy. Oh,
but, you know, nothing happened. We held it down.
I think you would have gave Tank a run for his money there, Big Naz. You definitely.
Hey, man, I'm like this, man. I'm from Detroit, man. I'm going home in one piece, man. I'm into the colors, man. The red and blues. I ain't got time for all of that. I don't do wrestling. You know, I don't do that. I'm in Detroit. You know, and the guys that I was rolling with, man, we had off-duty police officers, and everybody certified gun carriers, man. And That's just what it was. You know what I'm saying? So all that extra that y'all trying to, we wasn't doing that. You know, we got artists' lives to protect, and, you know, thank God that it didn't go to that point. But that's how we was laying, you know.
No doubt.
That's a part of the job that people don't realize, man. You know, when it's time to go to work, you got to go to work. But you better make sure your paperwork right, because if you pull that gun or you make somebody, you better have your licenses, your license stuff, man. If not, you're going to jail, too. But we all were super tight. We were all legal. You understand what I'm saying?
No doubt. Just one more thing. Just a light question for you, just from one hip-hop head to another. Give me your top five Detroit artists of all time.
Top five Detroit artists of all time. Oh, man, this is a tough one, man. All right. I got to include groups because there's a lot of groups here. I'm going to say Chaos and Maestro. AWOL. Dice.
Yeah.
You got to throw M in there. And a female artist that y'all never heard of, man. Acapella, female rapper. Female in the game,
wow.
Still to this day. Matter of
wow.
fact, I'm gonna give y'all a freebie, man, because we just finished the Shady Business soundtrack. I'm gonna give you a free download so you can put it on there, man. And then the female name can mess with this girl. To me, that's my top
cool.
five. That's my
so
top
no,
five.
No,
a lot of mafia.
No, Esham in your top five?
Well, you know what? He would definitely make my top ten. He'd make my top ten. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, you can't just, that's a hard pick, man. That's a hard pick. That's just my opinion, though. You know, and I like Esham.
Yeah, I feel you,
man,
because there's a lot of guys. I mean, like, it's hard not to put, like, Jack Frost and Awesome Dre and, you know, I'd be like, there's a lot of good artists, man. Like, you have K Stone,
Detroit's
Most
Wanted.
Proof. There's so many people. Like, it's hard to do a top five for real.
It is. It's very hard, man, because you considering way back when, man, we got a lot of artists here that have sold 50,000, 100,000, you know, just in the Midwest alone. But to get that nationwide push, what nobody trying to put us on, man. You got dudes here, man, that do 50,000 in a month, man, here. If it's hot, it's going to go. But then that's all it goes. It might do statewide. It might hit Ohio. You know, like T. Grizzly, that boy, man, he's probably one of the most successful underground artists here. He's dope, man. He's a lyricist, man. He's a lyricist. He's dope. But it's a lot of guys that's coming up that's like him and has been here, but can't get on.
Yeah, I like that guy though, man. He seems pretty cool. For being a young guy, he reminds me of somebody that would have came up in the 90s. Like, you know what I mean? He has that like older feel to him. You know what I mean? I like the guy, man. I'm glad he's doing good, man. You know what I mean? But, thanks a lot, man. Thanks a lot for clearing some of that stuff up, man. It's for real.
No problem, man. So look, I don't leave nobody out, man. Let's do top 10, man. Let's do 6 through 10. You got to throw
go
Esham. I throw Esham in there at 6. 7, I got to say Street Lords. Street Lords, Cheddar Boys, that's kind of like one group. You got a girl, the name was named Smiley. Oh, I can't forget my boy Doc Chill. Doc Chill, super dope. What's that, 8? Let's see. Did I say Awesome Dre?
You didn't.
Awesome
no,
Dre.
So that'd be nine.
My people Flows. And my man Divine Culture. Divine Culture, man. He's a cat from New York by way of Detroit, man. He lives here now. He'll eat up anybody in the industry, man. Anybody. I put him up against any male rapper, man. Well, that'd be easy to do now because, you know, you got a lot of mumble rappers. But like True MCs, he murder them, man.
Yeah, real quick, like, being that you were around Eminem, I assume that you were around Proof as well. What are your, do you have any, good memories of Proof? Like, is there, like, a dope story you can tell us about Proof?
The dopest story I got of Proof, man, and this is kind of like, I'm going to say rest in peace to him And what's my man that owned the Playboy Mansion that just passed away? Hugh Hefner. Yeah, Hugh Hefner. Now we had a party out at the Playboy Mansion at Hugh Hefner's house. It was a release party, Eminem's album, and it was just for all the DJs. They flew in DJs in all over the world, and they had a battle rap. Now in the midst of this battle rap, you got naked chicks walking around, you got exotic animals and tigers and llamas. It was all kind of shit that was going on, man. Proof did a battle. Paul Rosenberg got this battle on film. It was about 30 guys that lined up, took out every one of those guys. It was a true freestyle. So in my mind, in my personal opinion, he was the dopest freestyler to ever live. Because what he did, people would come up, and he would talk about everything you got on, talk about song, and none of the stuff was written. It was all spitting. I'm telling you, man, he's the one that taught M, Proof taught M how to freestyle, and M taught Proof how to write rhymes. A lot of people don't know that. I just gave y'all some history right there.
They both kind of made each other, kind of. You know what
yep.
I mean? One was good at the other.
Yep.
They taught each other. That's pretty dope.
Yep.
So you're saying there was
yep.
a freestyle battle at the Playboy Mansion? Is that what you said?
At the Playboy Mansion, man, and Proof murdered it, man. I'm telling you, dude.
Was Eminem
and was there any other notable names
Proof.
There?
Huh? I'm sorry, what's
was
that?
There any other notable names there? You said there was 30 people. Was there any guys like we would know?
Man, you know, it was, I'm trying to remember, man. That was, we're talking about almost 20 years ago, man. At that time,
yeah.
everybody was underground. You know, so nobody really had a name then. But it was a lot of guys,
okay.
man. It was a lot of guys, you know, from the local area that came in with some of the DJs. I know Funkmaster Flex was there. Who else, man? I think DJ Quick was there. Man, there were so many big-time people there. But, like, the upcoming MCs, it was just a lot of underground rappers. And Proof was murdering them,
yeah.
man. They literally stood in
wow.
line, and Proof stood in front of them. And he just took them apart. Just took them apart, man.
Did he battle
him? Huh?
Did he battle Eminem?
Okay. Would he battle
yeah, like during that, yeah, did he battle M during
no.
that? Was Eminem one of the 30
no,
people?
No, no, actually, M hyped it up. M was the one that hyped it up, and Paul videoed it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
oh,
it was
wow.
man, it was just phenomenal, man. I really hope one day that he can release that. It's like nothing you've ever seen, man. That's when I knew that guy
wow.
was truly talented. That's when I knew he was truly talented. I've never seen anything like that.
That's
even when
insane.
He used to do it here in Detroit, man, he was the best freestyler, you know, in Detroit, man. I've seen him just eat people up, man, pick them apart. Pick them
yeah,
apart.
He's funny, too. That's what helps.
Hilarious.
He has the comedy aspect.
The whole night, man. Brother left
yeah.
it too soon, man.
Yep. Was it a little crazy with the D12 guys? Like, did you notice, was Eminem different when he was, you know, when he had those guys around, like, you know what I mean? Like, cause some of those guys are some characters, man, like the dude Bizarre, you know what I mean? Like, did it get a little crazier when those guys were around?
You know what, man, it's funny, man, that you mentioned that. I just ran into Bizarre 2 weeks ago, man, at the airport, and I hadn't seen him in almost, what, 17, 18 years. And we talked about a lot of the old times while we were waiting on the flight. You know, they were like a band of brothers, man. I think when they were struggling, when they were on the underground, they were closer. They were more tight-knit. You know, sometimes, man, money changes everybody and everything. And I think that's might what happened to those guys. You know, when the money started coming in, you know, they started getting a little separation in between the two. But as they were coming up, when they was on the road with us, man, it was always fun. It was always practical jokes. It was a lot of love. You know, we ate good. We laughed good. They party hard, man. It was fun, man. It was really fun. I think I'm a little disappointed that they didn't do a third album. You know, we guys should have had a third album, but, you know, the death of Proof, you know. Right now, it's time for them to do another album, man, because, you know, we all need to eat. We all need to eat. I see Wu-Tang doing another album, so it's kind of like people are coming back doing reunions and doing that last album, or maybe even rejuvenating to do more albums. But it's definitely time for D12 to do another one, man. Maybe that'll be something that that Def Jam, Paul Rosenberg, can put together, put them guys back on.
Yeah, I hope something good happens for Detroit due to Paul Rosenberg running Def Jam. I hope something good happens for that city.
You know, man, I think, in my heart of hearts, man, I think he will do the right thing, man. I think he'll do the right thing. It's kind of hard to be a CEO, man, of a major label, and you know people back here starving. You got, you know, people trying to eat, and then you want to come back to the city, you know, because the minute that they see you, they're going to be at you with, you know, with their music or their ideas. So it's better for you just to come in and hold a casting call or, you know, do whatever you got to do, man, start putting cats on, man. I ain't talking about no whack cats. I'm talking about real hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't need more mumble rappers here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with you, man.
Detroit, man. But I definitely, Nance, it's getting time for us to wind down. But before we do, I want to make sure we give you the floor. I want to make sure we promote everything that you got coming and everything that you got out right now. But first and foremost, thank you so much for coming on the show again, man. Always an honor. Always an honor. Let's do a fourth one here maybe soon. Is that cool with you?
Okay. I'm sorry, what's that?
I said, let's do episode 4 here before too long.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. Hey, now I'm going to say this real quick, man, before you go. I want to send shouts out to my fam, Juju, Bryce, Brandon, my son Byron, who is also an upcoming producer and MC. Y'all can check him out on SoundCloud. That's Dose from the Pack, D-O-S from the Pack. Super dope, man, super dope. And somebody need to put him on, for real. We talked about him once before. That's Dose from the Pack. So y'all holler at him, man.
Definitely, man. What about if people want to get your book and whatnot, or your books, I should say? What's the best way to get all your merch, brother?
You can go to my website, relationshipbodyguard.com. Again, that's relationshipbodyguard.com. And then you can also get all my books on Amazon, under Byron Big Nas Williams. And, you know, just get them there. I got the audio books, the paperback, the Kindle, the hardcover, you name it, man. I got them all, man. And you're going to enjoy it. I write great quality books, man, and pretty soon a lot of them are going to be getting turned into movies. So I'm working with some very important people to license these books into movies, man. You know, this ain't no one-shot deal. I'm going to be here. I ain't going nowhere.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man. Everybody, this is Big Nance right here at the Murder Master Music Show. For the third time, man, we had you on a couple times last year. It was great, and as always, it's phenomenal. You take care of yourself, man, and we look forward to having you back on again in the future.
Honor, man.
Oh, huge!
Thank you so
much
for having me, man. Hey, let's blow it up again like we did last time, baby.
Definitely, man. You already know.
All right.
And everybody that wants to tune in to Church of Reality, we will be back next week. That will be on the 22nd. 9 p.m. Central. There are a couple callers we had on board, but we have to close it down. We will see you guys tomorrow with Dice from Detroit, man. We're staying in Detroit. We'll see you tomorrow with the legendary Detroit Pioneer Dice. Tuesday, we got Hellraiser, Sons of Man, you know what I'm saying? And then Wednesday, we got K Reno and VLP. So don't go nowhere. But next Sunday, we're going to have a nice discussion. You know what I'm saying, about, you know, Vegas, these wildfires, all kinds of crazy shit going on right now. And we definitely need to do a Church Reality. But this show came up at the last minute. Nance hit me up. Said, let's do a show, and, man, we got to do it. Last time we had Nance on the show, as he said, let's blow it up right before he left. Last time we had him on the show, that shit went everywhere. So, who knows, man? Maybe we'll get a little more attention our way. Maybe Nance will get some more book sales over there going, man. You know what I'm saying? Not bootleggers, though. None of you bootleg motherfuckers. Go out and get the goddamn book, download it, or buy the physical copy, whatever you do. But don't be bootlegging that shit. We'll see you guys tomorrow night, man. We're out of here.